Failure is not an option.
What difference at this point does it make?
Nobody said it was going to be fun.
This is Real Talk, a fearless, poignant, and intrepid show where truth speaks louder than words. This is Real Talk with your host, Audrey Russo.
The shame, not of this world, so we live on the run. We keep our eyes set, on what is to come.
It happened before. It will happen again. It's just a question of when.
Time's a luxury we don't have.
Hi, this is Michael Learned. I just had the best chat with Audrey Russo on Real Talk. I hope you'll listen. She made it so easy for me that I felt like I was sitting in my kitchen having a cup of coffee with her and with you all.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, this is Audrey Russo, and you're listening to Real Talk. President Trump spoke at CPAC. Was it a speech of encouragement or disappointment? And the job of the Supreme Court is to test the constitutionality of challenge laws brought before them. Have they abandoned their oath and duty in the 2020 election? Well, we're going to find out about this and more with my next guest. For my new listeners, Diana West is the author of several best-selling books, including The Death of the Grown-Up, How America's Arrested Development is Bringing Down Western Civilization, and American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. And she's also the author of the new bestseller, The Red Thread, A Search for Ideological Drivers Inside the Anti-Trump Conspiracy. Diana has contributed essays and features to numerous periodicals, including The Wall Street Journal, The Weekly Standard, and The Washington Post. She's also been a columnist for The Washington Times, Scripps Howard News Service, and United Media. And she can be read at The Daily Caller. It's my great pleasure to give a Real Talk welcome back to Diana West.
Yay, I'm glad to be back.
I'm glad the winter's almost over.
Yes.
It's been a brutal one, at least for here in New York. It's been brutal because, you know, you get spoiled. We had a few very mild winters and then suddenly smash right in the face. So,
right.
And it was, it's almost over. Woohoo. So,
exactly.
It's so great.
Take pleasure where you can find it these days.
Yes. Oh, yeah. After last year. Yeah. And after. Yeah. That still continues on.
Yeah.
We won't get into all the other fun individuals like Cuomo and such. Maybe we'll do that another time. Hopefully. We're going to jump in on this here. So President Trump spoke at CPAC this past weekend, as a matter of fact, and I'd love to know what your reaction was to his speech. Was it a speech of encouragement, for what lies ahead, or was it discouraging and leave us with no hope? What was your reaction to it?
Well, it's kind of a knife edge of both. I mean, this is an excruciating time, and I would say that Trump himself is a manifestation of encouragement in so many ways. I mean, he got out there, he looked terrific, he was confident. He exuded calm. And yet when I was very nervous about the speech, Audrey, because CPAC is notorious for essentially suppressing a lot of the hot issues our existential crises, whether it's immigration, which they slow rolled for decades, or Islam, subversion generally. I mean, they're very repressive, really, when it comes to anything outside the conservative mainstream. So with that as his venue, I was a little concerned about what would happen. Of course, he's Trump. So whatever he wants to happen essentially will happen when it comes to one of his addresses. But I started watching it. I was actually too nervous to watch it, so I was going to miss it. But he was late, as usual, and I couldn't miss it because I turned it on to find out what happened, and it hadn't happened yet, so I was stuck. Watching it began, and I thought, oh my goodness, this is a stump speech,
right?
And there's no stump. And he's talking about the Biden administration and the horrific agenda of the Biden administration. It's worse than we, anyway, it was basically all of the things that I am avoiding in my efforts not to be complicit with the illegitimate regime of the Biden administration, that he was actually normalizing it by essentially talking about it as if it were legitimate. And I was really crestfallen and thought they've really, you know, cut him down to size. And I turned it off, especially after he went on and on with just an utter love song to the vaccine. I find it hard to believe that he is not aware of the concerns about what it is going to do to people to inject this gene therapy into them, and the various alternate medicine that is available, which I know he's a fan of, but just the body of scientific objection to this program that he was so proud of. So that was disturbing, and that is when I turned it off. But then I was curious, how is he going to end it? So I turned it back on, and I, you know, heard something that made me very happy, which is sort of sounds perverse, because he was talking again about the stolen election. And I was so relieved to hear him going back into reality that, you know, I found this uplifting, which is sort of, again, a perverse reaction to be happy to hear a message of doom. But I was happy that he was still acknowledging that this was our plight. And I think that's very significant. But when you get to the point of how do we get out of this tunnel, I think we, and Donald Trump, and all of us, I'm really not sure how we set forth our next steps. He was talking about election reform. Well, to my mind, this is important in the sense that we need election law observed, not so much reform. It's kind of like the old canards about immigration reform. We
didn't
need it reformed. Right. We just need the law enforced. This is the same about November 3rd. So what is he supposed to do about it? Well, he's not president anymore. And it was kind of like the glow of Trump fades after he leaves the stage. And I realized that we are still operating in this new normal of this horrible regime that has essentially taken power from the people by stripping the re-election of Donald Trump from the president. And that is not just about him. That is more about us. We don't have the power of self-determination any longer.
Right.
And so this is kind of the dark place that we're left, no matter what sort of program the Republicans choose to follow. I mean, he was saying they must do this, but on the other hand, how can we believe that anything will ever come out any differently until you fix the fraud, until you fix the Dominion machines? You know, we've got the five swing states that we focused on, but I can tell you there are amazing things going on in the state of New Hampshire, which we did not even consider to be part of this contested election, after a recount in a county revealed that all the Republicans on that ticket, I believe four candidates in those local elections on November 3rd, they were all deprived of 6% of the vote that they then had restored to them after a hand count.
Wow.
And they were Dominion machines.
Yeah.
Well, this little tiny county is up in arms about it. But think about what that means. If in New Hampshire, which we were not even contesting, they are discovering this kind of penetration of subversion of the election at this micro level, think about what we're looking at across the country.
Yeah.
So we're still in that bind, no matter who says we have to move on and go to the 2022, 2024. And I haven't figured out how we break through this terrible vice, because it is a vice and it is crippling.
Yeah. This is, you make a very good point. We have to start there. I mean, I didn't, I unfortunately, I turned it off after I heard the which also sounded like a stump speech. And I was, you know, very disappointed, especially when he said that there was they were not going to start a new party.
Right.
And which I feel that at this point, the Republican Party is the Whig Party. I don't believe that you would take too long to replace the people, and they're too embedded in the swamp to
sure.
do this. So that's just my view on this. But I agree. I think that we must push for, we have to see what happened. We have to. If we don't,
right.
it's not going to change, and we will never, our votes will not count in the future. And it amazes me, and I find it stunning that the Republican Party, who knows what happened? They know what happened. They know this was stolen from the people. And they're not even concerned that their seats are not in jeopardy.
Right. Right. Well, you know what? The ones who go along, their seats will not be in, well, their seats
right.
will be in jeopardy, but if everything is rigged, it won't matter. In other words, the
yeah.
jeopardy comes
yeah.
from the people, but what happens at the on election day in the future?
Right.
Nobody can believe in it. Think about how that will also disaffect voters who will give up. I mean, yeah. this does become, I frankly don't see any way not to compare the plight of disenfranchised Americans, of whom there are at least 74 million at this point,
yeah.
to the plight of citizens in a communist country such as the Soviet Union after the revolution, where all of the institutions of power and justice and security were suddenly in the hands of a revolutionary cadre, and there was no more law.
Mm-hmm.
There was no more justice. Now, that was not a democratic state to begin with, so think about how much worse it is for us to turn around after the crisis period of November 3rd to January 6th, and realize we are actually no better off in these essential rights than captive nations in Eastern Europe, in across the Orient or Asia.
Absolutely.
I mean, this is the reality of when you realize that the three branches of government with the security and intelligence apparatus that I believe actually basically directs them stole the power from the people.
That's it.
It's the government that seized our powers. And so our role or our plight as Americans, our mission as Americans is, how do you get the power back from the government that has just broken every single rule and every single oath and taken it away from us when they hold seemingly all the cards?
It's a serious question, and we cannot ignore it if we want to keep this republic. We can't. And I think at this point, it's going to have to be done state by state. The people actually have to do something. They can't. I think it was a apathetic, and it was complacent to think you can just plop your vote for the president and he'll do all the work. It's up to us to do it, and we have to do it now state by state to ensure that the vote in your state will be secure, because on the federal level, it will not be done. They want to make sure. Look what they're doing with H.R. 1.
Right.
They're trying
right.
to ensure that the same thing happens so we turn into an actual banana republic. Right now, we're on the verge of that because, well, look at this. I don't call him president. He's resident. He's resident
yeah.
Biden. He's occupying the Oval Office.
Yes.
And I, you know, I chuckle about that, but it's serious. And proof of that is that he's surrounding himself with walls, which they said don't work, right? Fences don't work.
Right.
With razor wire and our troops. And why would you do that? It looks like a military dictatorship.
It does. It is. I mean, essentially it is. It may have a lot of cushioning between us and the military dictatorship, but it is essentially that. And, you know, we can't be fooled by optics, although optics do rule the day. So it's something that I will say, a ray of light here, and I do believe this, is that all the polling from November 3rd forward, even into February, shows that Republicans do not believe Biden got the White House fairly, did not believe Biden is the legitimate president. in great numbers. I mean, I'm looking at numbers every time I check one of these polls, whether it's Rasmussen or Fox News or Gallup or Quinnipiac or whatever it is, all of them, they show somewhere upwards of 60%+ up to 75-80% of Republicans know that the election was stolen. Yeah. And think about what a triumph that is when we are all subject to 24/7 psychological brainwashing from the media and everyone who participates in the media. It's really a testament to the resilience of, you know, believe your own eyes, you know, believe yourself, know yourself. And we have to hold on to that. That is how we don't be complicit with this regime. And we must stay true to what we believe and what we know, not what we are told to believe and not what we are told happened. And this is our challenge. So far, you know, it's early days. We are, as a group, holding on to that. That is sort of our foundation to build on. It sounds modest, but it's not. And I'm pleased with that. But it's the road is long and very difficult.
Yes. Well, you know, and I just noticed the other day, and this is, you're the one that can tell us if this is true and typical of communists. Well, they will use a sector like the media to do their work. And when they no longer need them, they're like thrown on a dung heap. Example is recently when Biden was speaking to the press, a reporter said, "Did you receive a briefing about the border today?" And he said, "Yes." And they said, "What did you learn?" He said, "A lot." And then he walked away. And the arrogance is incredible, but isn't that typical of communists?
Yes, it's typical of you know, dictators. It's also typical of someone who knows he can't answer questions. I mean, that's also at play here. Biden is such a degraded, mentally, physically degraded human being. I mean, the whole level of malevolence in even his family circle in terms of inflicting this on him while he's being inflicted on us is, you know, there are just so many concentric circles of evil here. But yes, it is. And of course, the media doesn't care because, you know, it's not a matter of hypocrisy. It's a matter of the revolution. Putting the agenda forward, it's really quite a game. And you know, we don't as people who are law abiding, who are not criminals, it's hard to play these games. And I think that is our biggest disadvantage. It's also what makes us. So I'm not suggesting everyone become a criminal or unlawful, because that is right. Who we are lawful and not criminal, but it does put us at a disadvantage when people will lie to you, when people will cheat, when people will try to mess with your mind. But we just have to be smarter to understand and learn these tactics. And I think that everything from, you know, January 6th remains such an important date in our history. It's like the biggest psychological operation against us that we've seen. It's certainly in many, many, many years, if not ever. And it continues to have this impact on trying to change us and absolutely twist everything. But we can never forget that there was space there on January 6th, that afternoon, to stop the certification of the Electoral College due to pressure and activity and due process going on in the states themselves, which is where it was supposed to happen. And that was lost to us with this whole manufactured crisis at the Capitol, which we're now still being dictated to about. Yeah. They've just recently doubled down on, I guess, the razor wire orders in terms of locking down the Capitol due to, quote, threats. Well, they can say they're threats every single day, whether they're threats or not. I mean, that's the power of the intelligence world and its propaganda wing, the media. So we have to just keep our best hold on the facts possible. Yes. And, you know, thank you for letting me talk, because it's really hard to get messages out there these days.
Right. And the reason I had mentioned that I think now it has to be done by individual Americans in their own state to ensure that the vote has integrity is because of the failure of the federal courts, especially the Supreme Court. Now, for the listeners, federal courts hear cases involving constitutionality of law, cases involving laws and treaties of the U.S. ambassadors and public ministers, disputes between two or more states, maritime law, and bankruptcy cases. The Supreme Court, of course, being the highest court. Now, recently, the SCOTUS dismissed every case filed concerning the constitutionality of law changes regarding the voter integrity of the 2020 election. Three of those justices, Thomas, Alito, and Gorsuch, dissented the dismissal of these critical cases. In his dissent, Thomas expressed frustration, writing that the court, and I quote, failed to settle this dispute before the election and thus provide clear rules. Now we again fail to provide clear rules for future elections, end of quote. Diana, it appears we have a serious constitutional question with the current SCOTUS. Should those who refused even to hear the cases resign because of a violation of their oath for personal consideration? And this, now, by the way, their oath, which they didn't have one in the Constitution for them, and they created a brief one in the 1800s, but it changed, and now until 1990 when they changed it, the Judicial Improvements Act, and it followed, and this is it. They say, I, so-and-so, do solemnly swear or affirm that I will administer justice without respect to persons and to do equal right to the poor and to the rich, and that I will faithfully and impartially discharge and perform all the duties incumbent upon me as so-and-so under the Constitution and understanding agreeably to the Constitution and laws of the United States, so help me God. Does it appear as an American for whom the Constitution was written, by the way, it wasn't written for lawyers, that the six justices who refused to hear these cases have violated their oath?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the ruthlessness here and the absolute reckless disregard of the oath and the Constitution and the people who have been wronged and needed a day in court to have this evidence aired is epic. And I would say that my own feeling is that they were first and foremost determined not to let this evidence reach the public record. I think that that has been a great motivator of numerous cases in the lower courts being turned back without actually getting any sort of hearing that we've seen from Election Day forward or even before. And going up to the Supreme Court, we see the same thing, these basically a slammed door ruling. It wasn't like they listened and looked and had the various advocates make their cases and then they rule and we can all see it and we can all feel good about it or argue about it or think it was a bad decision. We didn't get to that transparent part that we are owed as American citizens. No, this was peremptory. It was something you would see out of, you know, communist Albania. I mean, this is not the way the Supreme Court was ever designed to function. There is a schism in this country that is deeper than any since the Civil War, and the Supreme Court had it as its duty to hear the opposing sides present. And then we go from there. That's how we're supposed to work. But they shut the door on it. They absolutely just tanked for the swamp. They took it for the swamp. This was all about the consolidation of power that went into the seizure of the election. It's a seizure. It's a coup. There is no other way to describe what happened between November 3rd and January 6th. That is where they are, and that is what they are. And It's extremely discouraging, but it goes into this notion that the three branches of government are colluding against the American people. Let that sink in.
Yeah, I hope it sinks in for the listeners because it is a shocking but true. It look, we saw that for 4 years, didn't we? Didn't we see the intel community, which is to me, as far as I'm concerned, you need to gut the FBI. By the way, they're not part of they're not in the Constitution. They have been created by the Congress. We need to gut the FBI. I think it is rotten.
And the CIA.
Absolutely. All the way through to the entire core from inside out. With you know, I'm saying you might have. Let's put it this way. My late mom used to say you have enough to count on one hand and have fingers left over about how many people are have integrity within those two agencies. It needs to be gutted.
Yes. No, I think you're exactly right. And that is a big part of the problem. I mean, basically, the whole notion of the shadow state or the deep state is an intelligence state, something we can't see, something we can't control. And the three branches of government essentially become a front for that. And I think that is what we have lived through. And I see the election as a part of the continuum of the anti-Trump conspiracy that had so many different kinds of events, you know, starting from before day one that we've been talking about for all these years. And it's one continuous effort. Not, again, not solely to target Donald Trump, although yes, he was our knight in outsider armor. It was to target the outsider who represented the people, but it's aimed at the people. It's aimed at the masses. It's aimed at the American people. And that is first and foremost what has happened here. And you just see all the different permutations and emanations, whatever, from this horrible act against us that are now being consolidated during this Biden-Harris regime. And frankly, I would just like to throw out there, I don't believe that Biden and Harris are making the decisions.
No.
Certainly Biden isn't.
No.
Harris certainly is nobody with that kind of background.
No.
They are essentially warming seats for people, a force we actually do not know. I mean, this is how kind of science fictional and just dangerous this whole situation is. We are farther and farther away from any kind of democratic republic than we've ever been. And you know, is it even within our grasp to get back? That's an open question. I don't know. We have lost it. We are not there at this moment. And, you know, it's a great moment of crisis and demoralization. And don't let anybody, you know, tell you it's not, that anything's back to normal. And I actually think it's good for us to sort of dig into the demoralization and crisis and kind of really try to understand what it is, and not go into denial, you know, not just give stump speeches and not just kind of think we can work within the system. The system is working against us. We cannot work within it. And, you know, next steps, I don't know, but this is realization. Reality has got to be the start. You know, it's got to be where we begin.
Exactly. We have to know what happened. We need it exposed to the world. Everybody knows this was stolen from the occupiers of the White House out. They all know it was stolen. Yeah. But it needs to be exposed to the people so everyone knows what the truth is. And I'm still thinking the only place this can start is that people need to, within their own state, they need to find out what happened. They need to have the investigations done there. And then from there, work on voter integrity. Otherwise, the vote will not count anymore, unfortunately. It won't, because
right.
you don't
I
know, you know,
you.
We've been lied to. And this was, unfortunately, the final successful coup attempt.
Yes.
In the 4 years. So we can't sit back and relax. And still, of course, they're still oppressing the people with all these mask mandates and all that. Although Texas, and this was politically expedient on Abbott's part, but everything's over. And they're open 100% starting next week. And Mississippi as well. So they joined Florida in that. And of course, South Dakota never closed. So nothing. So this is going to spread because either these blue states, well, I think it's going to happen in New York, only because he's on his way out. So,
right.
So thank God for that. What I'd love you to share is where the listeners can follow and support your brilliant work and purchase your books, including The Red Thread, which will help people understand a lot of the things that are going on.
Oh, thank you, Audrey. Well, DianaWest.net has all my information, and I have been doing little chats on the Patreon channel as well. And all of that can be found at DianaWest.net.
Excellent. And of course, as always, I'll have those links in my after show, which is now on the live show page. Just go to AudreyRusso.com, click on the honor button, and right under the show description, you'll find all the links and information that Diana just shared. Thanks so much, Diana, for sharing your brilliant assessments with us. We look forward to your return to the show. Until then, may God bless you, your work, and may God save America. Bye for now.
Bye for now, Audrey. God bless you.
God bless you.